Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey Nathan, today we've got a fun topic.
That's right. It's the top 10 tech that makes new cars worse.
Yeah, you know, we've spent a lot of time, like, in the picture here, if you're not watching this, listening to it, it's me and Nathan standing in front of the brand new Mercedes-Benz EQS AMG. And I have found that some of the things in not just this car, but other cars with the latest tech is not making the car better.
No, it's like they made it overcomplicated, made things more difficult by trying to make things easier.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work sometimes.
So we're going to have a conversation. We're going to talk about the top 10 things which we think are making our lives worse and not better. But before we do that, Nathan, two things I want to get to. So I had a horrible thing happen to me the other day.
Oh, I'm married too.
No, it wasn't that.
Oh, okay.
That's a whole different conversation. No. You know, so we live here in Colorado,
yeah.
And at this time of year, we have peepers. You know what peepers are?
Please tell me, because I don't want to say what I think it is on.
Wait, no, it's not what you're thinking. Nothing to do with, you know, what you're thinking. It's leaf peepers, right? People who go up to the mountains.
Oh, the looky-loos.
Yeah.
I call them looky-loos.
Yeah, leaf peepers. Anyway, we have beautiful aspen trees, and they turn this incredible golden yellow at this time of year. And then with that kind of fall sunlight, it's just magnificent.
It really is. Yeah.
And the mountains swarm with people, you know, peeping at aspen trees.
Well, you can't blame them. That happens on the East Coast, too, apparently.
Yeah, it happens everywhere. But here, especially... the issue becomes then on the weekends, and I was up in the mountains over the weekend. When you're coming down, it's like ski season. There's all these peepers. Peepers?
Yeah, you're on the right track. I call them looky-loos. That's better.
Yeah, but that's a real estate term.
Yeah,
I don't want to apply a real estate term.
You're just angry about real estate. Keep going, though.
These leaf peepers coming down, and so traffic is really bad. So I'm driving down from the mountains, and you know how busy I-70 gets just past the tunnel, right?
Yeah.
So the Eisenhower Tunnel. So I'm not taking the tunnel because I know that's going to be a nightmare.
Uh-huh.
So I'm coming down from Loveland Pass, which is by the Loveland Ski Area.
Which is a gorgeous drive, by
which
the way.
Is a gorgeous drive. So I'm coming down. I've got, you know, our Bernese Mountain Dog, Blazy, in the back of the Hummer that we just bought. And he's just chilling back there. He's just sitting back there chilling, you know, enjoying the view. I'm enjoying the view. And I look down and I see this horrible line of traffic heading back home.
Mm.
But something interesting happens. And that is when you merge onto I-70 from that Loveland merge, right, the one coming down, it's like a mile-long merge. It's the weirdest thing. It's like...
it's a really, really long
merge.
Yeah.
And so this is the horrible thing that happened to me. I'm just driving along, and I'm in the merge, and I'm like, hey, this is a mile-long merge, so, you know, it's a lot of traffic, so I'm going to wait till the end to merge, which is perfectly legal. Nothing illegal about that.
Right.
And a truck out of nowhere pulls out and blocks me, and I slam on the brakes, and poor Blazy goes flying into the seat. I mean,
no.
I was terrified for him, Nathan. Like, just this big rig semi-truck just pulls right in front of me into the merge lane from the lane that I'll be merging into and blocks me on purpose. I slam on the brakes, and poor Blazy just slams into the front seat.
Oh, that poor pooch.
Yeah, I was terrified. So I pull over, because there's a little, like, pullover there. I get him out. I check him out. Luckily, he's a sturdy dog, right?
Yeah, he's a big dog. Tough
he's
dog.
A big dog, yeah, 95 pound. He's all muscle. Mm. He's fine. He's like, hey, that was no fun, but I'm okay.
Yeah.
He shakes it off, and I'm like, shh. And I'm like, what kind of a dickhead would do that? You know, it wasn't, I wasn't, let me be clear, I wasn't in the breakdown lane. I was in the merge lane when the guy in the semi-truck, out of nowhere, just rammed right in front of me into the merge
lane. Well, I have an answer for you.
Yes.
What were you driving again?
The Hummer.
That's your answer.
You think that was...
Because... I know it is.
Interesting.
Whenever I drive an expensive, really not just ostentatious, but vehicles that are really bright and colorful and look like they belong to a rich person or whatever, I sometimes get people who will cut me off or brake check me and pull little games from time to time. It doesn't happen all the time. But I can almost guarantee you that Hummer can be seen from space. And as that trucker's going on, he's probably thinking to himself that, you know, life is bad, I hate everything, and look at this jerk in this, you know, $100,000 Hummer. Screw him. Look what I'm going to do. Aha! I'm not kidding. I think that that car actually is the reason why he did that.
It could be. Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. It could be like, you know, people think that just because you're driving a $110,000 car. But I was okay with it until, you know, Blazy slammed. You know, because look, if I get it. You're pissed at me that I'm merging, and maybe I should have merged earlier, so you're trying to block me from merging. I get that, but you could have really hurt, if not worse, the dog in the back seat. And maybe I should have had him restrained. I don't know. I've looked at some of those dog restraints. They don't seem to do.
I use those from time to time, and I have one dog that totally works with it, and the other dog will freak out when I put her in it. So it's not necessarily, especially with a dog your size. That is a huge dog. That's a human, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a projectile. It's a 95-pound projectile then moving. And let's say let's take the dog out of it because I felt horrible for him, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say that you had something on your back seat.
Yeah.
You know, a lamp. I don't know. You know, that thing could have came flying through the back seat and into your head, right? I mean, it's just a douchey move to do that.
It is, and unfortunately.
And out of the nowhere. I wasn't like, hey, it was like signaling. It was just like, I'm driving along, next thing you know, full brake.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's exactly why, specifically because of what you were driving, which is a shame. People do that. You know, someone did that to me a long time ago when I was driving my daughter's car and I had my son in the back seat, and they rolled coal on me.
Yeah.
And I get it. You know, there's a Nissan Leaf. I'm going to nail him with a ton of coal and, you know, whatever. That's, you know, funny. Until I was so obscured, the image was so obscured, I couldn't see where I was going. I had to hit my brakes because I couldn't see a car in front of me or anything else. And the guy behind me nearly nailed me. Fortunately, I think he was sympathetic to the fact that there was this massive black cloud in front of me. And, you know, people do that and they don't think about the consequences of what's going on inside the car. Like when people are going slow in traffic, as long as they're not in the left lane, people don't understand that sometimes maybe there's kids in the car, maybe something happened in the car.
I think any of you guys who like to roll coal on bicyclists or on guys in convertibles or on pedestrians
or electric cars,
just you in my opinion, just you've lost your truck guy card or gal card, right? Mm. Just take it away. You're not cool. You're not funny. You're just douchebags. Right, that's just such a douchey thing to do, along with brake checking people. It's just dangerous. It's stupid, and it doesn't prove anything. It doesn't make you more manly or womanly, whatever whatever you think it's doing. It's not. It's just and Nathan, you know, as a journalist, right?
Right.
My first instinct is always to whip out the camera. I mean, if I had been so concerned about Blazy, right? Because that was my first instinct, was make sure the dog is okay.
Right.
But if it had just been me in that car, I would have whipped out my camera, and you can bet, guys, that truck's license plate would have been on social media and would have been, you know, on every one of our channels. I was that pissed off about it.
Did you pulled over. It's a shame because most likely those trucks are owned by
carrier. How am I driving? That would have been like all over our social media like 2 seconds later.
I tend to call the people, by the way, often when trucks are being driven wrong or inappropriately. I'll call them directly and say, listen, your guy's all over the road. This is an insurance issue that you're going to have to deal with because it's going to cause an accident, and I'm going to report this.
Well, imagine if the poor Blazy had broken his leg or something. What have I done? You know, I'm in the middle of traffic. Dog's got a broken leg. What am I going to do? How am I going to take care of him?
Right. I agree with you 100%. And people just don't get it. And in traffic, you know, tempers flare. I've learned in my old age, because I used to lose my temper all the time in traffic.
I mean, it happens. Road rage happens. I get it.
But I learned, if everything goes to crap and you really want to run this guy off the road, flip the switch in your head, pull off, breathe for a few seconds, get off the freeway, get away. if you're late for work, you're going to be late for work anyway. You might as well just, you know, take an extra 10 minutes, cool down, or else you're going to cause something you're really going to regret. And
where are the cops at that moment? You know,
I know.
You're driving along at 67 and a 65, and next thing you know,
yeah.
But, you know, somebody does some shit, stuff like this, right? Sorry. And you know, next thing you know,
you have every reason.
There's no cop around. Yeah.
Yeah. You have every reason to be upset. But the bottom line is this is an unfortunate part of society. And I really do think the reason it happened is because you're driving a really blingy car.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Or he was just having she was having a bad day and wanted to, you know, not have this person pass him in a blingy car, like you said.
Yeah, I do think the car was part of the reason. So keep that in mind if you guys are, this is important advice for you, if you want to buy a really expensive vehicle like this Mercedes or that Hummer, don't, because you might get cut off in traffic or treated poorly. Buy yourself something like a Toyota Yaris. And you'll be happy. There you go.
You know what's invisible? A minivan, Nathan.
Minivans are pretty invisible.
I was driving the minivan, the Pacifica, right?
Yeah.
And like you could pull up next to a person and you could stare at them and you could like do a blah, 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 blah. You can make faces and they will know. They won't even like even nudge their head over to look at you. You are completely invisible. In the Hummer, you pull up next to them and there's like 15 kids pointing at you.
Well, yeah, just like driving a Lamborghini or something like that. It's the same exact thing, and it's I think it's really funny, but at the same time. Wasn't it in Great Britain where it was like the Ford, one of their van was the number one vehicle for bank robberies?
Oh, yeah, was it Transit?
It was like the Transit or Ford, whatever they used to call
Transit,
it.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why is because it's just nobody cares. You're not looking at a proper getaway car. You're looking at a van. And it's like, who cares? It's just a van. And yeah, you can do anything in those things.
Hey, by the way, a couple things. First of all, there are three things now you brought. I'll do them in order, okay? All right, number one, we were talking about rolling coal.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that like 20-year-old Ford F-250s that are diesel always stink? I'm not saying they're rolling coal. I'm just saying I was driving along, I look up, and I'm like, God, there's some really stinky diesel, right? And then I look up, and sure enough, like three cars ahead of me is a Ford, like 10-year-old or 20-year-old F-250.
There are issues with injectors and whatnot that creep up
after
a while.
But it's always Fords. It's like the Super Duties do it.
I've actually had that same issue with some Rams and some old Cummins.
The Cummins, yeah. I find it always like a Super Duty.
Yeah, and also, you know, some people who buy them just don't know how to maintain them, and, you know, second, third-hand trucks sometimes just aren't maintained properly. And you have to maintain a diesel properly, or else it will stink and eventually croak on you.
All right. So, what were you just talking about before? I've already
forgotten. Minivans.
Innocuous. Being completely invisible in a minivan. What other cars do you think you'd be completely invisible in? I was going to ask you. Let's pick the cars where nobody will ever look at you. Here's what I was thinking about. So I want to. You know, we were talking about like building an overlanding van, right?
Yeah.
That's all you've always wanted to do, like an overlanding van series.
I want to do a special series on that.
Do we have a name for it? Did you come up with it for
$2,000 for a van or $3,000 for
a van.
Yeah.
Where we buy like three vans.
Yeah, for a couple thousand dollars, crappy minivans.
And I thought to myself, like you know, me and you have spent time sleeping in Walmart parking lots when we were doing that Motor Mountain USA,
mm-hmm.
And that is the scariest place.
Sketchy.
It's sketchy because there's no good people hanging out at a Walmart at 3 a.m.
No, I believe you are all good people. Unlike Roman. So if you're going to use the knife, use it on him.
There's a lot of sketchy people at 3
there,
in the morning.
There are quite a few.
Agree. So if you're in a camper, it's like this giant flashing neon sign that says "Rob me, meth head," right? That's what you feel like. I'm sleeping here. I'm not paying attention. Come on in and take the money that I have, because everything in the world that I own is in this van.
It happens, but there are benefits. Go on.
So I came up with a way to actually cleverly disguise the fact that you're overlanding and you're camping in a Walmart overnight.
Okay.
So you get a van, like a white van. And here's the thing, right? You get like a big like caricature of a plumber, right, rooting a toilet.
Okay.
Right? And call it like Joe, overflowing toilet. Joe's Toilet Care has got you covered.
Okay, I got you. Right? So in other words, make it look like a plumber's van.
Exactly.
Okay.
More than a plumber's van.
Ah.
A toilet plumber's van. Because no one's going to...
Because of the stench of the... Well, then if you're going to go that far, you might as well tow a porta potty too.
No. And then take like one of those like rooters. You know what? You know those things?
Yeah,
that you
the
use
snakes.
Yeah. Take one and put it next to all your stuff on top of the van so that you really sell it, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And no one's going to come near that.
That's a really good one. A police van would be another good one, making it look like it's, you know, one of those
SWAT van.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you really want to go that far, I don't think anybody's going to break into that. I've been at quite a few Walmart parking lots, and there was one thing that I did note that is very positive, and that is, and this is in deference to a lot of people out there who do this, they do have security. A lot of these ones that are just rolling around, and it's kind of nice to have, even if they're in a golf cart and they're half stoned or whatever, you know, half these security guards, whatever. The fact that they're there does help. It's a bit of a deterrent. So there are some positives. And in the very near future, my friend, we may have to go to a few additional Walmart parking lots with a special trip we're doing very soon.
Yes, we'll talk about that some point.
But maybe we should move on. I mean,
if it gets stinky, we get busy. You know, something like that. Something to really reinforce the fact that you do not want to come anywhere near this van.
Yeah, well...
One more thing, okay? So in the last episode, if you guys were listening, you know we got a nasty letter from Matt.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, he was a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's basically sent us a very... You can listen to that last week's episode. And I'm not going to reread it. But basically sent us an email saying that we were unprofessional.
Dangerous.
And that we were uneducated and dangerous. Well, anyway, I replied to him. Uh-huh. And then he replied to me.
Oh.
And it turns out we started to have... There's something about social media that sometimes brings out the worst in people.
Yeah.
So we started to have this really good conversation. It turns out he's actually like an EV fleet manager was. And okay. He knows his stuff. So I suggested that he come on the show. And he said yes.
Okay.
Would you guys want to let us know in the comments if you're watching this, if you want to actually hear from Matt? I was going to have him on the show via Zoom. Unfortunately, then I had to go and I was out in Cali last week doing the CRV hybrid.
Right.
So I couldn't get that established, but maybe for next episode we can have Matt on the show and he can he can talk about his experiences with managing a fleet of EVs. I think that would be interesting.
Okay. All right. But please don't take this as a cue for you to send in really, really angry emails and hope that
I just wanted
Roman's going to go, I'll talk with you and bring you onto the show later on. This is a unique case.
I just wanted to engage with him because, you know, he was so vociferous.
Pissed off.
Yeah, all right. He was so ardent in his views. So yeah. I would figure there's got to be something there if somebody's that, you know.
Nonetheless, I'm glad that you guys were able to work it out, and eventually we'll have him on the show. But once again, please don't send in a whole bunch of hateful email expecting Roman to say, yes, you can come onto the show.
All right,
so it doesn't work that way.
So I'll tell you what led me to today's topic.
Okay.
All right, so today's topic, of course, is we're going to talk about the new tech that makes modern cars worse, all right? And this is a new tech, but this is what got me thinking about it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's pretty cold out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
The frost is just starting to be kicking in with Colorado.
But here in Colorado, we actually have pretty strong thermal radiation, right? Because mm-hmm. we're at a mile above sea level, and when the sun shines, even if it's cold outside, it still feels very warm.
Yeah.
Right? So even though it's like, what was it, like in the 30s or 40s this morning? Mm-hmm. So I get up, I get in the car, and I set the temperature to like 68, which is where I always have it. Mm-hmm. But outside, it's like 38, right? But here's what happened. I set the temperature, I start driving to work, and the car is very warm inside. But because the thermometer of the car reads the outside temperature, it started pushing in more heat into the car. So the cabin of the car was already like in the 70s because of solar radiation, whereas the outside of the car was like in the 40s. But because the car thought that it was actually colder inside than it was outside, it actually started heating the cab instead of cooling it.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's because the sensor in the vehicle wasn't working or because the sensor outside was overriding the sensor in the car, but I was like, why? It's hot in here. I know it's cold outside, but why doesn't the car understand that it's, you know, already hot in here?
Yeah, well, I have a feeling different cars have different electronics in some cases, and perhaps you won't have that same problem with each
car.
But
you've had that happen? Have you had that happen does the exact wrong thing?
I don't like using auto.
Okay.
Ever.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's because often what's happening is based on whatever the location is of the device that's measuring the temperature, that's the area it has to warm. And so it may blow a ton of heat into the passenger area until that little spot gets warm enough. That's one issue. And the other issue is It depends on the size of the car. If you're driving a van, a minivan, as we mentioned, it takes a long time to heat that up. But when you're in the front, that's where a majority of the vents are. That's blowing the heat to try to make the whole thing warm. As such, you are going to get really, really hot until everything evens out. So that's why I use manual controls almost all the time, with only a few minor exceptions. But I think we should probably start on this list, but maybe right before we do, I wanted to do a quick shout out to our Patreons.
Yeah.
Guys, your support has actually made it possible for Roman to get run off the road with a large dog. But seriously, we couldn't do what we do. We couldn't drive what we drive without your support. So thank you very much.
And this morning at our morning meeting, we were talking about actually doing this podcast as a live show. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and they do record them live.
Yeah.
So I want to judge to see if you guys be interested in actually, you know, buying tickets and actually coming and joining us. Maybe I suggested we do it at the ranch. It's kind of out of the way, though.
It's really out of the way.
In our new barn, we could probably, you know, certainly do it in there. But is that something you guys would be interested in? Would you actually be willing to come?
Yeah, as part of your feedback, please let us know if you would be interested in attending one of these live, which means we would ask for your feedback while you're in the room. Can't be here because we can only squeeze about four people in here.
There are other
facilities we're looking at as well. So by all means, let us know if you're interested. If this is something you'd be interested in.
Like four people there, maybe a Coke machine, a popcorn machine.
Seriously, four people in here comfortably. It'll get really hot, speaking of getting hot. So speaking of HVAC controls and heating, air conditioning controls, and whatever you want to call them, this list is mostly based on tech. Four vehicles like the one you were just driving. For those of you who are able to watch that Mercedes up there, which is a super high-tech, very cool car, but it has a lot of gizmos in it that I think are really unnecessary. So this is a list. It's not really a top 10, but there are 10 of them in here, so it's in no particular order. Shall we get started?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so the first one is haptics, or lack of a hard button.
Let's go number 10. We'll count it down.
Okay, so that's number 10.
Yes, I completely agree with you. In that car, Nathan, so Mercedes, so once again, this is the brand new 2022 Mercedes-Benz AMG EQS. Sticker on it is $150,000. And once upon a time, Mercedes had the very best seat controls, right? Basically, it was a little...
like a silhouette of the seat.
Of the seat.
On the door.
On the button, yeah. So if you wanted to move the seat back and forth, you would push the lower cushion, the little silhouette of the cushion, the little plastic back and forth. Now they've gone to haptic, which it doesn't move. It's there, but you're supposedly supposed to touch it, and it's supposed to actually do what you want it to do. But inevitably, because I'm used to pushing on it, I push too hard, and I feel like I'm going to break it, or I push in the wrong place, and it does the wrong thing.
That is very true. And I actually completely agree with you about that, with the Mercedes controls and the fact that they made something that worked beautifully, overcomplicated and completely unnecessary. But it also goes into the regular controls throughout the vehicle. A lot of vehicles do it, even our Hyundai that we're using.
Well, the other one that completely got it wrong is the Volkswagen, the ID4, now the Golf R. We're not getting the Golf anymore, but the Golf R. They went to the slider switch. Mercedes also has it.
Yeah.
On the steering wheel, use your thumb, and on the screen, you kind of got to use your finger to move the volume of the radio. It absolutely doesn't work. You would think like Honda tried it, and Honda had to walk it back because people hated it so much.
Yeah.
So
Mercedes, but they were willing to walk it back.
But I'm saying like this happened like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And Mercedes gleefully walk down the same path. It's like, are you not? Do you think the people who are buying Hondas are not also buying your cars? It would seem to me like that would be a lesson you could easily learn.
Well, the other part of it is that a lot of the buttons that they have there do or do not have feedback, and some of them aren't hard buttons. And I think you and I agree, and I know Tommy does, that hard buttons really do help. And not having them, not having something that has an actuator that goes click, when you're driving and you just want to feel it as opposed to having to look on the huge dash and try to find something that's not really telling you that you're hitting it, it sucks. It really does.
It becomes like a distracted driving thing.
That's exactly it.
And Consumer Reports is hammering hard on that as well, because now they're actually digging these cars and not recommending them because it becomes dangerous because you're sitting there. I'll give you an example of the Mercedes, right? On the left side next to the little seat controls is the memory seats, right? Mm-hmm. So you hit the M, and then you hit 1, 2, or 3. But right above the M are your heated could see controls, but that whole panel doesn't click. It's all haptic, so it's so easy to fat finger it and hit the heated seat in the middle of the summer as opposed to the memory seat. So you're driving along and you're like, okay, I want to set my memory seat. And next thing you know, your butt's, you know, boiling because you hit the wrong button and you've just fat fingered it.
And just a couple of years ago, driving a Mercedes-Benz, it used to have some of the more intuitive buttons that clicked and actually felt like they were doing the right thing. Now, I know some of you are out there like, well, it's cost savings because they're mashing these things together onto a screen.
I'm probably right, yeah.
But it's a $150,000 car. So there's no cost savings that I'm really interested in. If you're going to do that, give me some buttons. And old people like Roman do drive these cars. And he wants his switches and he wants to feel things, actuators moving. So
I want big levers, Nathan.
He wants levers and knobs.
I want to be like steampunk and big round things.
That was a nice, useful mention right there,
check
too.
Check this out. So we just bought a 1972 Mercedes-Benz 250C.
That's
right?
A beautiful car, too.
You know how you adjust the seat there? You reach in between your legs and you pull on the little lever and then you slide the seat back and forth. Or you reach to the side and there's a big knob on the side and you twist it.
Yeah. and then it works. Crazy.
And then like you have two adjustments and you're comfortable and you're like, wow, this one, you know how you adjust a lumbar?
probably three different buttons that you have to get to.
No buttons. It's in the screen.
So you got to actually get to the screen.
It's in the HIPAA screen, right?
Oh, God.
So you got to go, you got to first of all hit the home button.
Yeah.
Then you got to bring in comfort and convenience, right? And then there's three choices there. One is like lighting, one is massaging seats, and one is lumbar. And then you got to push the lumbar button, and then there's a little diagram which lets you, with your finger, kind of scroll along to see how far you want the lumbar to actually come
all
out.
Of this you want to do in high speed traffic.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know some of you techie guys are like, well, wait a minute, you're going to be in partially automated mode driving, the car will be driving itself. It doesn't matter. You really don't want to take your eyes off the highway for that long just to figure out how to do lumbar.
And then when I got in the car, Zach had driven it, and we're different heights. I've got a weirdly tall torso.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the heads-up display. And it's supposed to kind of rest, if you're looking out the window and you divide the window into thirds, right? Top third, middle third, bottom third. You usually want it at the bottom third so that you're looking at traffic. And then you're looking down at the heads-up display.
Well, right.
He had put it right in the middle. So I was looking through.
It's like a fighter pilot looking at constantly at, crosshairs.
I'm not joking, dude. I spent, 5 minutes trying to figure out just how to lower it.
So that's one of them. Another one, and this is part of the tech package, is street sign recognition. And I got to tell you, it's the most useless thing on the planet. And some cars react to it differently than others.
So this is number nine.
Yeah. And honestly, when you're driving down the road, some of these vehicles, if you have them in cruise control especially, and they see a street sign, and you're going slightly above the speed limit, and they see the street sign, they'll actually slow down for you and put you into the legal speed limit, which sucks. I hate that. Not only that, but it brings the sign up in front of you. I know there's some people who may be like, oh, I didn't really realize it was a 45 zone. I'm so happy my car told me that. But you know what? I would say a majority of us are like, I got my eyes. I can figure this out on my own without having it take up space on my infotainment screen or in front of me or on the IP telling me.
So where we're getting at here, Nathan, I think is the same place, right? I hate when technology kind of tries to outsmart you and does something you don't want it to do.
Well, yeah, or unnecessary.
Yeah, so with street sign recognition, I forget what car I was driving, but I had cruise control on, and I had it set at, usually, where do you put it? I put it, 5 over, right?
Yeah.
If it's, 60.
You were probably driving the Lightning.
Could have been the Lightning, yeah.
I think it was.
And every time the speed limit would change, it would automatically slow the car down.
That's what Ford does.
Yeah, by itself. And I'm like, no, don't let me do that. Don't.
Let me be in charge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it goes beyond just the fact that it's popping up on the display. It goes to the point of, it's interfering with your driving and your enjoyment. And then your stress level goes up. And then Roman has this little temple thing where the veins come out on the side of his forehead. And that means that, I'm going to kill the car. So we can't have that.
And then I think what Volvo does is, it might be BMW as well. Let me know in the comments if I got these wrong. But it'll actually flash the sign red when you exceed the speed limit.
So I've seen that in other vehicles.
It's like yeah. pissed at you. It's like a naggy like co-driver who's
like,
"You're going too fast." Right? It's like flash, red. And I'm like, "Yes, I know I'm going." It happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're merging onto traffic. There's a merge that I have to do to my house, and you merge on. It's like to merge on successfully and safely, you have to exceed the speed limit. And the last thing I want is
while I'm trying to merge.
You know, onto traffic. So, and but what happened to people merging, Nathan? This has become a lot. You know, the zipper merge is one of the most brilliant innovations in all of traffic control.
Someone goes in front of you, and then you get to go in front of someone else. Yeah, that's how it works.
And there's two merges I do coming to work. People stop. Like they literally stop and sit there, and you've got like a quarter mile of where you could, you know, merge safely. And it's just so frustrating. I'm like, dude, it's a merge. It's not a stop, right? If there's a stoplight, and then it says merge, and you go around the stoplight, usually it's a right turn, and then you merge onto the traffic, and they move over, and you move in. It's a zipper. It works. But no, they stop, and they sit there, and you honk at them, and then they look at you like you're some kind of an idiot because why are you honking at me? I'm stopped here because there's traffic. No, you're stopped because it's a merge, and you should be accelerating, not braking.
We could do an entire podcast or two based on the horrible driving that people do nowadays, going in fast lanes, leaving their turn signals, not using their turn signals, you name it. There's a lot, and you guys all know this, though.
Seinfeld called it, like in Florida, the perpetual left.
But I think that's about right, though, isn't it?
Or perpetual right.
All right, let's move on to the next one. And this one really ticks me off. And number eight on this.
Uh-huh.
And I've been yelled at by some of our viewers, like, dude, this is for safety. And what I'm referring to are the new door handles that other people are coming out with. These door handles, there's a variety of different ones, but they all have something in common, and that is they're not actually door handles. They're small pads that actuate when you grab the handle, and actually it hits a little lever inside electronically to open the door, as opposed to pulling a latch, which has been around for a very long time, and opening the door to... And I know it sounds like, well, you're making a big deal out of nothing. Not necessarily, because there was a Lexus, an NX, that I recently drove. And on more than one occasion, with this silly pad inside the door handle, I, you know, went to pull it, and the door didn't quite open all the way. And then I let go and try it again because you think it's a lever. It's not. You actually have to slam the door shut and then try again. And they say it's done for pedestrian safety. That's one of the reasons why, because the whole door now will tell you not to open in traffic when you're inside or outside the car. But having a button or other types of door handles, like the ones that come out of electric cars, they'll actually pull out and, you know, look really cool.
Yeah, retractable. Those have become, like, Tesla pioneered those, and now every electric car has to have, for aero reasons, retractable.
That's what they say, aero reasons.
Yeah, retractable door
I've
handles.
Actually seen those malfunction with heavy frost
and
in snow.
So, like, the Mercedes that we've got, well, I don't mean to pick on Mercedes, it's got these door handles that the whole door handle comes out and then lights up like a ring around. It's very elegant, but you wonder what happens, you know, with frost. And then, like Tesla does now, some of them that kind of cantilever out. You know what I mean? Where you push on them and then they come out.
They flick out a little bit. Yeah. And I just feel that these are all way too overcomplicated.
I got the sneaking suspicion that, like, a traditional door handle where you just reach underneath it and pull up, like, the aero effect of that is so negligible. And it's just become like a electric car thing. It's not about aero. It's just like, you know, we have to do it for aero, but if you really look at the numbers, I can't believe a traditional door, not the 1970s big ones with the button on it.
Yeah, no, but you're talking about a modern
where you just reach underneath
and
pull.
It's a very slick, you know, thing.
You just pull. Yeah,
I would agree with you. I'm pretty damn sure that the whole aero thing. Look, there's mirrors on your car, and that's required still. Cameras aren't there yet. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have side view mirrors. That creates plenty of resistance on its own, so extra door handles probably won't cause any...
The other thing that's coming, and this is kind of tangential to this, is, and the Mercedes does it, and the Genesis we have it, those are electric doors now.
That Genesis, it's cool, but it's completely unnecessary.
Where they open, either at Genesis, at the push of a button, it'll close the door, or like a Tesla, I think the Model X has it, where you hit the brake, the door closes. And what ends up happening with me, at least, is you forget about that feature, and then you end up fighting it, right? It's because it's got a motor, it's got an actuator.
Yeah, you can hear it screaming when you're pulling the door closed.
you're like, so you forget that it does automatically close. So you pull it, and next thing you know, it's like it doesn't want to close or it doesn't want to open because it's supposed to be actuated automatically.
So to add to that, a friend of mine from a place I used to work at, he sat in a car recently, and he expected the door to close, and he was staring at it for about 5 seconds before
with his brain, like a Jedi mind.
Yeah,
trick?
Well, he was just couldn't understand why it wouldn't close because he had,
you shall close.
So, self closing doors and all this are completely unnecessary. That's just a little piece of the pie. But the whole thing is that with these doors, it's just I feel it's completely unnecessary. And I'm going to go on to other stuff that not only is it unnecessary, but it's also a pain if something goes wrong. Well, because then you don't have access to your car.
Like I like soft closed doors, right? Where all you have to do is just gently close them, and then the thing automatically closes the last 5% of the way.
Right.
Those are good, but completely, I don't know. It just seems unnecessary.
See, I like hardcore ones. You said soft. I like them hard.
Like,
where
bam.
You actually grab them like a man and
you
close
slam,
them.
Like a truck. You just slam the thing.
I just want a door to close when I grab the handle and close it. I want the seats to be easy to control without having weird buttons.
God, we sound
and
old.
I want a dial for it. We'll get into that in a second. But I wanted to go to the next one.
Right.
This is one that irritates me
Number
a little bit.
Number 7.
Number 7 on our list is rear seat reminders.
Oh, God.
I hate those. I know some of you guys, especially new parents, are like, but you might have left your kid in the car. Honestly, if you are getting in and out of your car and you need the car to remind you that your little one is in the back seat, maybe you're doing something wrong. I am an absolute featherhead. I screw up all the time, but I have managed not to leave my kids stranded in the car or have the car necessitate a warning. There's something in the back seat, or you really should look in the back seat.
So I don't
want to look.
So there's like two, the dumb and the smart one of those, right? The dumb one is just every time you close the door of the car and get out to go get a coffee at the 7-Eleven, it just reminds you, have you made sure that there's nothing, a pet or a child in the back seat? That's just stupid, right? That's just like it's like, you know what that's like almost? It's like when you get on a plane and they read the same thing to you every single time.
I almost wish
at some point it just becomes actually counterproductive, right? Because you not only ignore it, you completely like tune it out at that point.
I have a funny story about that if
okay.
you want 10
yeah,
seconds.
Sure. Yeah, go for
yeah,
it.
On a particular flight, I think I was looking at my phone or playing a game and had my headset on, not paying attention because that we fly all the time. I mean, weekly. And this guy next to me, he's an older guy and he elbows me a little bit. And I look over at him, and he makes a gesture. So I pull my headset off, and he goes, "Aren't you going to listen to the lady?" And I couldn't roll my eyes enough for him to understand that what he had done was – I was stunned. And so – but I collected myself quickly, and I said
– You got shamed.
No, I know. And then I turned to him. I said, "Have you flown before?" And he said, "Well, this is my first flight." And I'm like, mother, you know, I mean, everything in my head is just, but I really didn't want to be a total jerk to him. And so I said, "Listen, I fly all the time, so I know the warnings. I can read them to you later." And I put my headset back on and closed my eyes and put my head over my eyes just so he'd leave me the hell alone for the rest of the flight, which he didn't. But anyway, that can you imagine that, though? Someone just like, you know, hey, you really need to listen to the person who's talking. No!
So do you fly Southwest?
I think it was Southwest, yeah.
I have a friend who's a Southwest flight attendant,
yeah.
And he was telling me that if the plane ever crashes, we're all dead. Because the first, like, three rows are all the infirm, elderly, obese.
I know. Nobody's getting off the plane in the front.
Nobody's getting off the plane. And comfort animals, they're all in those first three rows on Southwest.
Yeah.
It's going to be like a cork in a bottle. Between grandma and...
Oh, well, you know what happens? I try to sit in the, you know, the escape rows.
Hey, airlines, here's an idea. If you really give a rat's ass about my safety, stop flooding the plane with alcohol. How about that? Wouldn't that be an idea?
Every time I fly back from certain states, the people are like, I can always tell where they're loaded.
Yeah.
I mean, completely drunk.
Oh,
they're smashed.
He was telling me that, like, one of those little, like, drink they have like little, you know, they're sealed. They have those little like bottles of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Booze. The airline pays like, you know, like $15 and it's worth like $500.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm serious. If you really care about my safety, stop getting people drunk on planes, right? Because these are the bozos who are trying to go out the emergency door during the flight, who decide that they want to join the Mile High Club, you know, who decide that the best way to vent their rage is to do it on fellow passengers. And the alcohol just makes that so much easier, Nathan, much easier.
I would agree. And we're going to move on to number six. Yeah, we went on to a tangent, but that's part of the you know, that's why you guys love the show.
Okay. Let me go back to what you said.
Okay.
So there's dumb ones, which are just these stupid reminders. And then like Hyundai does a smart one where they actually have sensors, right? They have motion sensors that point in the back seat. So if you do happen to forget your child.
Or a dog or whatever. That's right.
And the kid moves, the dog jumps, it'll do one of two things. It'll flash the lights and sound the horn, and it'll also send you a text to your app. Which now that makes sense, okay? Now
I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah, like a little.
That should be adopted by everybody.
Yeah, it's a very simple. Sensor.
Yeah, it is. It's a really good system, and especially for those parents and pet owners who are forgetful, it's great for you guys too. But let's move on to another one, and we kind of touched on it. Number six. And that is the volume control knob. I know we're old men here, and you go ahead and yell at us in the comments below.
No, I disagree. I'm just waiting for some manufacturer to put square wheels on the car, because the volume and tuning control knob is the most perfect solution. There is no better solution.
It is totally intuitive and simple.
Perfect. There's nothing you could do that would make, like I said, just put square wheels on the car at this point, because, you know, the wheel has been invented. Why do you have to reinvent that wheel?
And this is something that's been going on for a long time. I had a 1984 Ford Thunderbird. It was one of those wrecking yard cars because I worked at a wrecking yard. And I just drove it around for a little bit. And the aftermarket stereo system back in the day, you know, Blaupunkt or something. Ooh, good stuff. Alpine. But instead of having a knob, it had these little tiny volume control up and down arrows. And so that goes all the way back to the 80s. And I hated it then. And it just didn't work the way I wanted it to work. And, of course, I'd have to look at it in order to...
You know what's cool? Those old... equalizers with the little bars that you can move up and down. You can
create, 19 of them, though.
Yeah, you can create your own sine wave. That was cool.
Especially on date night when you're a teenager and you're just like, no, I'm going to get the perfect sound. I'm going to play Journey. I know I need more bass. Here's the 110. I'm going up as high as I can. Never mind
the sky.
Yeah, but you're driving at the same time as you know, Steve Perry's singing. So you know, that type of thing goes right back to what we're talking about. So the volume control knob has been a source of headaches for designers for years, because in their mind, and I have talked to a couple designers about this, you and I have yelled at them about this, and they say the same thing. When we buy these packs, because they buy the technology from someone else often, there's usually a supplier who brings in these components. It is a lot easier to have an entire screen where your buttons are and all of your sliders and everything else, rather than having a screen and then a separate control for a knob, which even by today's standards is considered archaic, whatever if you want to say it, but it's cheaper for them and it's easier to develop just a whole screen that you plug in modular rather than having to find that extra knob. And one guy, a viewer, said that it's a safety reason, that they took away the knob for a safety reason. His point: if you get into a car accident, you can embed yourself into the knob. And I'm thinking,
like those old 50s cars where you would impale yourself on the steering wheel. You're going to embed your hand by accident into the knob.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's saying. And just like, dude,
I blame Audi. You know, Audi started this trend. So Audi came along and decided that the best place for the volume knob was not next to the radio, but next to the gear shift lever, right?
Yep.
And then Mazda followed along and put it down here.
BMW did too.
Yeah. And then they were like, you know what? Instead of a knob, let's do like a roller, right? So then they went to the roller.
Hyundai does that.
Yeah. And then BMW. You said, you know what, instead of a knob and a roller, let's do finger gestures, right, where you kind of spin your finger, you know, and then now they've said, you know what, instead of a knob or a roller that's next to, or finger gestures, let's just get rid of it and do a haptic slider, right, where you brush your finger or your thumb up against it on the steering wheel or on the side. And it's to the point now where you can't even control the volume. I've given up on controlling the volume.
Yeah.
Just give it, and God help you if you need to change the station, dude. God help you if you need to change the station or change the input from like your phone to, let's say, Sirius or to FM radio or AM. God help you where that is buried, right?
Yeah.
Once upon a time, it used to just be like, hey, you'd push the FM button and you get the FM station, AM button.
But now you got to go through three different pages in order to get to it, which is just ridiculous. Another thing is that some of you guys might say, well, you have steering wheel controls, and some of them are brilliant and really easy to use. You know, the easiest one to use still is Stellantis, where the volume control and the tuning
are in the back of the steering wheel. Yeah. Those are all old school.
And
I love those.
And they work really, really good.
Yeah, and you can that's like a magic
Chevy does
trick
it too.
You can
yeah.
Do it for, hey kids, think about whether you want the volume to go up or down. Let's see if magic will do it.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that I think that it's very hard, at least for us old coots, to present.
Stop with the old coots.
Just hear me out. It's they're often, you guys are saying, you guys have old thinking when you are thinking about these knobs and these sliders or gestures work. They don't. And we drive thousands of cars a year, if you consider all the people that work at TFL. And I have yet to see anybody replace something as simple as a volume knob with something better. That's the bottom line. And Roman will fight you. All right.
I mean, at some point, if you enjoy Googling things and if you enjoy having the car do stuff that you don't want it to do, then yes, call me old, because I like to have the car do stuff that I want it to do. I don't want to spend my day having to look at YouTube videos or Google tutorials that tell. I'll give you an example of this. Here's a perfect example of this. All right. So me and Tommy screwed up. We have like the same Apple ID. I don't know how that happened, but it happened. Right.
Okay.
So that means that at some point I end up with his pictures on my phone, which I don't want. I end up with his.
I'm sure you don't.
No, which I end up with is music on my phone, which I don't want. So, and it's very hard to separate the Apple ID once you've done that. It's not easy.
Yeah.
So one of the things that like Apple CarPlay does, which I also, you know, there's a lot of great things about Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, and we can go into those, but you know what they are. But there's also a lot of really crappy things. And as
it's kind of the next on the list.
Yeah. As the technology gets more, those two technologies have become more and more invasive. So here's what used to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
With Apple CarPlay. So Tommy downloaded this band called Chromeo, which you would hate, which
yes,
I hate.
I know exactly who
Chromeo,
they are.
Right? Chromeo. And it's the only music I have on my phone, because I not that I don't want music on my phone, but I don't want to fill it up because I do a lot of videos on my phone.
Right.
And if I fill it up with music, I don't have space for.
Yeah,
you see understand. The, you see
yeah,
the problem.
Of course I do.
So every time I plug in Apple CarPlay, guess what comes out of the radio? Chromeo. And I have one song. And why does it do that, Nathan? I'm sure if I were to Google it, I could figure out. But why do I have to? Why does it play Chromeo when the Apple CarPlay connects to the car?
Something tells me that Tommy did this on purpose, and he just absolutely loves it.
It's like you where you change the presets.
I do change the presets and screw around. And,
It's Ozzy's Boneyard. Every time
I love Ozzy's Boneyard, yeah. So people are stuck listening to old heavy metal because of me, and I love it. But see, that the reason I do that, actually, in many cases, is actually because when I turn the car on, I just want to hear my music. And my daughter put a couple extra songs in my phone, and they pop up every time. Because what she did was she changed the name of them and changed the alphabetical order. So sometimes when I plug my phone in and it goes into Apple car mode, it suddenly plays the first song that's on there.
Yeah, I know
and
why.
And for a while it was Vampire Weekend, but she called it AA Vampire Weekend, a little pain in the butt. And she... suddenly I'm listening to something I don't want to listen to.
Well, I could do Vampire Weekend.
But I'm just giving you a reference, specifically what she did. Now, this goes to the next thing on our list.
The other thing Apple CarPlay does, which drives me crazy, is like I'll go for a run and I'll listen to podcasts. I love listening to automotive podcasts, right?
Yeah.
But I like the long form, so I like listening to them on my run because it usually takes an hour and it's a perfect, but I don't listen to them in my car because I never get into them because I'm just driving like, you know, 10 minutes here or 10.
Right, right.
And then I'll be listening to it on my run, and I want to save it for my run, and then I get in the car and it starts playing, and I'm like, I don't want you playing the podcast when I get in the car. Just stop it. So I've gotten to the point now with CarPlay where I just have it Bluetoothed in, so the phone works and it's got my contacts, but the Apple or Android Auto does not take control of the OS for the system, the operating system of the vehicle, because
right.
It's too invasive.
Well, that brings us to number five.
Yes.
On our list, and that is overcomplicated infotainment and OTA updates, over-the-air updates.
Yeah, so
that's part of this whole puzzle.
So, Tesla pioneered them, And once upon a time, the over-the-air updates that Tesla did were great. So I remember we had the Model 3, and I got an over-the-air update, and it actually made the car quicker, right? So they actually changed the way that the batteries were delivering power. They changed the efficiency of the car. That was cool.
Oh, they did a lot of cool stuff back in the day.
Back in the day. Now all you get with a Tesla is like an Apple update. It doesn't tell you what it is, and it gives you some like vague message about security updates. Mm-hmm. And then the car, of course, is like doing it in the worst time possible when you don't want it to do it. It's supposed to do it at night. Like Apple said, have you noticed that Apple says, update the phone or computer at night, and then you wake up in the morning and like, you want an update? I'm like, weren't you supposed to do this when I was sleeping?
Yeah.
So now the updates don't do anything except probably like protect them from like some kind of
changing the firewall parameters or something like that. Yeah.
Or getting sued. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, you're agreeing to some bullshit thing that you don't read through anyway because it's too long and who's got the time for
right.
it?
Right.
And the one that actually is doing stuff now is Rivian. So the Rivian over the updates are actually doing actual things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, guys, if all you're doing is protecting your legal ass or, like, fixing stuff that's making the car worse, sometimes it actually makes the car worse.
Because, there have been updates that screwed up cars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or makes you know, then don't do it. It's not helpful.
It's going to become more of an issue, not less.
Yes.
Because as vehicles become more and more electrified vehicles – their actual drive system can be directly influenced by an over-the-air update, as opposed to, say, an internal combustion engine, which may not be as to fix over-the-air.
I got one for GMC. Yeah. Okay, here's one, and I think this is actually a bug in the system. So we've got this Hummer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got OCD, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I love it when you lock the vehicle and the little mirrors close.
Yeah.
Right? Because that to me, because I always do this thing where when I leave the vehicle, I look over my shoulder, and if the mirrors are closed, it tells me it's locked. Because I'm always like, did I lock it? Didn't I lock it? If it's not, then I got to reach in my pocket, find the key, and I lock it again. It just stresses the shit out of me. Stresses me out. Sorry, guys. I don't mean to swear. Stresses me.
He's been cussing all day, hasn't he?
I've been very stressed out.
You can tell. Okay, so go on.
So I love this when the mirror is closed because it's a visual representation of the fact that so there's a little virtual switch in the GMC that you hit. It's called courtesy something or another, and then it does that, right?
Right.
It when you lock the vehicle, the mirrors come in. Every time in the GMC, it defaults to being off. I'll set it on. I've done it like 50 times now, and I'll go in the office or I'll go shopping, come back. I unlock it. The mirrors will not open. They'll be closed. I have to manually open the mirrors, right? And then I look at the little setting, and it's switched off. It just automatically defaults to it. Now, I asked the dealer about it, and I asked GMC about it, and they said, oh, it's because it's programmed to the key, right, which is possible.
Yeah.
So the key actually overrides whatever, which is also stupid because the key shouldn't override. But anyway, it does. So then I programmed it with the key, with both. I actually tried both keys, and still every time it defaults to being off.
I feel your pain.
It's a vehicle doing something that I don't want it to do.
Right. And
so, hey, GMC, if you're listening to this, look at it, okay?
Because
I think it's at this, seriously, you know, we're pretty professional here. And I've spent a lot of time Googling this. I spent a lot of time talking to people, and I cannot get that feature, even supposedly programming the key, right? Because there's two keys, and each of the key sets, like key one sets the seat settings to the first setting, the number one, and key two does the number two, so that if you have a wife or a significant other partner, you each can have different settings for the vehicle. But this thing always defaults to being off.
Okay.
Always.
So GM, you need to fix this.
Yeah, fix it. Yeah, look at it. Or tell me how stupid I am. And if I'm missing it, and I'm pretty technologically like savvy, then maybe whatever is in there that's doing it, you need to simplify.
Okay. Now, speaking of having something that you really want fixed or removed in some cases, how about I think we're down to four. We're down to four.
Okay, four. Anyway, well, it doesn't matter. At this point, I was trying to kind of do it the TFL way to count them down. So at this point, we've lost count.
Okay, it is. It's number four. Augmented engine noise.
Ooh, that's a whole world of pain.
Now, there's a lot going on here because
Ember City's like burps. Did you notice that? When you lock it, it goes, rrr.
Yeah, well,
it's some like vehicles, Chewbacca burping.
But some vehicles don't really need any of that. Now, we are in a new world where hybrids and, of course, electric vehicles, they have to have some sort of augmented noise just to tell other people that they're moving or it's some sort of component that's part of the drive.
So what are we talking about? Let's split this up. Are we talking about internal combustion engines where they augment the vehicles
to make them sound better?
Or are we
meaner?
Talking about electric cars where they fake the sound?
Both. We're talking about both.
Let's start with one. Let's start with what you said was augmented engine, though, which is like the Raptor where it's got a funky V6 and inside the cab it sounds different than outside.
It certainly does. I understand why they do it. If you stop thinking about it and stop thinking about the fact that I'm listening to something augmented, it can sound pretty cool. They started doing that early on with like the Ford Focus ST and some of those other vehicles.
It started with like BMW used to do these little tubes that actually was a little tube that
it was a resonating tube.
Yeah, that would actually come from the engine, so you would get more of that engine sound. Because obviously you don't want the noise, vibration, and harshness coming through, but you do want that cool engine note coming through.
Provided that it's cool, and that's the thing, is that it's got to be cool. So one of the important parts of this is that they make it so some of these vehicles sound a little too good, which can be one of the problems. And the other problem is that when you go to the outside of it, it sounds really cool on the inside. Then you get outside and it sounds like a Cuisinart. And you're like, whoa, God, they really were overdoing it inside. And it can be really disappointing for those people who really want a meaty, angry sound, and it's really not there.
Well, I mean, there are some cars like the Mustang GT, which sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Or like the Hellcat truck.
That Cadillac we just had one of the best engine notes I've ever heard.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Jaguar does the same thing. Mm-hmm. And some of those actually are also fake. Like the Jaguar, they feed actually gas into a chamber that then
makes a pop. And
you get that.
They're not the only ones who do that. And other ones use baffles, which don't even change the performance, but make it sound better.
But while that's fake, it's real fake. And then there's fake, right? So they're using gas to create that sound, whereas fake is you're using either the speakers or Audi uses the windscreen actually as a resonator to create augmented engine note.
And then you move on from there to hybrids and electric cars that do not have an engine note or don't have anything worthwhile but are provided one that some people find a little ridiculous. I do like the fact that Tesla has a couple of different noises that you can plug in. And other
BMW had like a famous musician actually create their
sound. Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, was it Hans Zimmer? Yeah, I would be like, my take on that, Nathan, is like just lean into the quietness of it. I kind of like that. Just if it's electric, just keep it quiet at this point. If it's gas, make it sound cool because it's gas. But you don't have to make an electric car sound like a gas car.
No, it doesn't need to sound like a gas car, but it needs to have a noise. There's the whirling noises and other noises. They have to match decibel level of your quietest gas-powered car, specifically
that
Hummer for pedestrian.
Does this like...
Mercedes does that wow thing that sounds like a UFO. And that's totally fine. I don't mind that so much. Inside the car, some people really have a hard time with the sound that the car is making. A little, sometimes it just sounds like a little whine, like my daughter's car even makes that noise.
Here's the engineering problem, right? Mm. When you take away the engine noise, which a lot of people find pleasing, like me and you, right?
Yeah.
Then you're stuck with the stuff that isn't pleasing, which is wind noise, which can be a whistle, and tire and road noise, which is just annoying.
Yeah.
So then the question is, do you hide that? Do you augment that?
This is why I listen to punk rock and heavy metal very loud. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, except with the volume knob, you can't turn it off.
Without a volume knob, I'm screwed.
Exactly. Now, you're listening to Vampire Weekend or whatever your daughter's got going on there.
I have nothing against Vampire Weekend. It just happens to be really annoying.
Or is it The Weekend? Isn't there two? There's Vampire Weekend, and then there's The Weekend. Yeah, I think there's two weekends.
Sorry, I'm really old and I don't listen to the new stuff. Anyway, there's a point, and that is that a lot of you guys, and I just think it's unnecessary tech, especially in internal combustion cars, to have that piped in sound. I think that at the worst, just keep it as it is, and at best, you can actually. Oh, there's one more thing I wanted to add, actually, and that is. Stellantis has actually come up with a different solution.
Yeah, they've gone with they're like organ pipes for their electric.
With the kazoo.
Yeah, the kazoo.
That's what I call it. You're blowing wind through it, and it makes a noise because it's actual pipes.
For their electric muscle car.
Right. It could be awesome. All right, I haven't driven one yet. Nobody has. But
wait, what's that car called?
It's the Challenger.
Yeah, but it's not the Challenger. What's the full name of it? It's like four things, right?
Yeah,
it's the Daytona.
Special, blah, blah, blah. Challenger thing.
Charger. It's a Charger. It's okay. Not a Challenger. It's
well,
a Daytona
Charger. If only we had a device where we could look at these things rapidly. So while Roman's doing that, the point is that this particular vehicle that I'm referring to, which looks amazing, by the way, has these tubes that run through it, and then there's a little fan or something like that that actually blows through the tube, and then it comes out in the back where you can actually hear it. And according to Andre, who was there to hear it, you feel it in your chest. So it really is something that is an actual
Dodge Charger Daytona SRT.
Okay.
Concept.
So the Charger that I'm talking about that you guys have all seen on various media because it's out there, that has this – it's a different type of augmentation. It's actual air being blown through something. But my issue with that is this. It doesn't do anything else other than make noise. If it was used to cool the brakes, if it was used to go through the battery section to help cool it and extract some heat, I'd be like, oh, great. It's a bonus. You're actually using a fan and it makes noise. And
you know what's cool about that car? That wing that they built
the front wing is like the most amazing thing. There's some other people who are going to start copying that real soon.
So that's cool because it's functional and cool. Right?
The rule No. It's that the wing is functional and cool, but the sound is not functional.
Right. I'm saying the rule should be it has to be both functional and cool.
Right. So if it did something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So that's my gripe. So let's move on to the next one.
So, you know, the video we just put out, by the way, go to AltTFL if you want to see all of our videos. I reviewed, the Mercedes-Benz AMG EQE SUV. F me.
Seriously.
I know. Come on, Mercedes. Really?
I think the Germans are doing that on purpose.
EQE SUV.
Let's just add as many letters as possible. See what these Americans do.
Are they just screwing with us at this point?
I think they're screwing with us. I think they have a laugh. You know, that one of them lights up a cigarette and like, haha, wait until they try to pronounce this one. Aha, there you go.
How many three-letter combinations can we come up with?
Just keep on going. And how much room do you have on your trunk to actually have all that spelled out? It's ridiculous.
You know what was the funniest part on there? So go to AltTFL and you'll see the review of this. And they did this thing where they had both the non-AMG version, I'm not even going to say it, and the AMG version. Mm-hmm. So we all look at the non-AMG, and then we go over, and behind a wall, they have the AMG version of the EQE, right?
Right.
Which is like their mid-size electric sedan. And to distinguish it from the regular plain Jane Mercedes-Benz version, it doesn't have the star on the hood, right? The little badge. It's got the AMG badge. You know what's on the AMG badge? Guess what's on the AMG badge?
A star?
A piston.
A piston?
We all look at each other.
On a car that doesn't have pistons.
Yes, we're all looking at each other, and then we look at the engineers, who are really cool, by the way. And we're like, are you guys going to keep this piston? And they're like, it's part of our brand. I'm like, yes, but it's not part of the car.
Yeah, this is German humor, okay?
I think you're right. I think they're now, at this point, they have officially started to screw with us.
I really do think they're having a laugh, which is totally fine.
Which is fine. I'm enjoying it. Keep going.
I'll tell you what's not fine, and that is number three on our list.
For all you Brits, it's like taking the piss, or how do they say it?
Are you taking a piss?
No, it's not are you taking a piss.
Taking the mickey, in the mickey.
It's like that, but it's
taking
like
the mickey out of me.
Yeah, it's like that, I think.
If you're British, please correct us.
Yeah.
So this is something that actually comes from our friends at Hyundai, and some other people I think are looking at this too, and that is triggering the brakes if your door is open and you're in gear.
Yes, I love that. That came from like Jeep, right, where that Star Trek dude got run over.
Well, that was part of it.
Yeah.
And there's a seatbelt part as well. There's a component with the seatbelt. So in other words,
the actor who played Chekhov, right?
Right, in the movies.
In the movies, got out of his car.
It was a Jeep.
Jeep, and it was in reverse, and the car was on. He didn't know it, and it crushed him.
Yes, it did.
And so now what happens is if you're in reverse and you open the door, the car goes into full autonomous braking, which is quite startling.
Yeah.
When you experience it, like when you're like, hey, I've got these really beautiful rims and I don't want to curb them, so I'm going to open the door to see how far I'm away from the curb. And as you're backing up, it just goes boom.
Oh, well, it actually gets worse, and I'll get to that in a second. The other part of that is some cars will not go into gear if your seatbelt's not on.
Yes.
Okay, so you're still in park, you don't put your seatbelt on, you try to drive, and you know, it's no dice. Now, I'll tell you where that becomes a problem, and that is if you're at a gas pump and you got out of your car, I have to back up a little bit, and you have to jump in, close the door, make sure the seatbelt's on to go back 1 foot. Or if you're parking and you have to readjust with parking, or if you're going off-road and you need to look out the vehicle for some reason, jump in and out like you often have to do. Look, I'm not saying drive without a seatbelt or, you know, don't close your door. But I am saying there are times where those are needed. So I would prefer if the car decides after 5 miles per hour, hey, the door is open or the seatbelt is not, now I'm going to hit the brakes.
But shouldn't there be like some mandatory, like a course, I think, where you have to get some kind of a license and you have to know like basics about the vehicle before you can actually.
Oh, you mean actually getting your driver's license?
Isn't there something like that that we're supposed to go through?
But that doesn't prevent people from cutting you off in traffic and slamming on their brakes.
But isn't there a level of knowledge that we're all supposed to have?
It is a strange thing.
Where we're given the privilege to drive.
Yeah. So what they're doing is that they're adding in yet another layer in terms of what they're allowing you to do with their car.
Well, you know where this is going. It's going all toward autonomous. Here's the thing, man.
Somewhat autonomous,
guys. I'm gonna be level with you now. Okay?
I'll be level. Okay. Strap in, guys. Here we go.
Strap in, okay? For all of you EV haters out there, right, who think that they're gonna take my truck from my cold head hands, right? You guys are barking up the wrong tree. You really are. And I promise you, it's not about electrification. It's about autonomy. That's where you know, if you love trucks and if you love driving, you know, electric cars aren't better. They're worse. They're not worse. They're just different. What's terrifying is what you're exactly talking about, which is autonomy and what's coming, right? It's actually taking the driver, the fun part that we love to do, the part that gives us the freedom, the part that gives us the control, taking that away from the driver, legislating it away from the driver, and making it so that we can no longer drive cars and trucks.
Yes, and then I'll add to that.
This isn't just big
government doing this, folks, by the way. I know a lot of you are like, oh, it's the government. No, it's the automakers.
Yes.
Why? Because it keeps them out of court when stupid things happen, because there's not one guy who lives God knows where, but for some reason he decided to open the door to his car, slam it into reverse, and then jump out deliberately at some point in time and then sued the pants off the company.
So all these things we're talking about, right, you'll see in electric cars, but they're also on brand new internal.
They are on internal combustion engine cars.
So if you love driving and if you love, stop it with hating the EVs. Start worrying about this, because this is what's going to really take it away from us.
And full autonomy is something I don't think we'll ever do in my lifetime, at least. But we'll have
partial, say never, dude.
Partial autonomy for sure, and that means stuff like this, where they're taking away your ability to drive a car because you're doing something that might be stupid, but also might be logical. The car can't decide whether or not you're doing something because you have to quickly jump out and jump back into the car and quickly move it 3 inches. But you're stuck.
You know what's super ironic about this? Huh. Like Tesla charges, what is it now, $14,000, I think, for their full self-driving.
Yeah.
Basically for the ability for you not to be able to do the thing that we all love to do. And that is, you can say what you want about Mr. Musk there, but that is quite the accomplishment to take what is great about, you know, automobiles and trucks and charge to take that away from you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... And there's one born every minute. The other thing about that, by the way, and then this, I want to move on to the next one because we've been here for a while, is that a lot of you guys out there are sometimes, you know, you have a baby in the back seat, something happens. Now, the car won't slam on the brakes if you take your seatbelt off while it's in motion. That won't happen. I already tested it. However, it'll scream at you when it does. And there's something about that where
cars have become so naggy.
They really have.
So
and that's part of this whole thing that we talked about, the back seat reminder and all that. It's such a pain. And I'm going to tell you on the next one, on number two, what the biggest pain is for me. My biggest issue.
Speed limit signs, naggy, autonomous, like, you know, when you're driving along and you take your like eyes off the road because you want to like change the station on an incredibly difficult to do operating system, right? Nags
beep,
at you.
Beep, beep. Your eyes. Please grab the
consider
steering
taking
wheel.
A coffee break.
Yeah.
You know, this is just like, hey, let me be me. Let me just drive. I've been doing this, and many of you have been doing this for, you know, here's the thing, which people don't understand. Here's something else that's interesting, right? Computers suck at driving, Nathan. Computers
yes.
are, humans are really good at driving.
Potentially.
We are. Actually, as animals, we are really good at driving. So I'll give you an example of this. I think we were talking about this before, right? You're driving along and there's a bunch of pigeons along on the side of the road, right? This is why autonomy has taken so long, because computers are really bad at it. So a computer does not know what those pigeons are, right? You and me know that when you see those pigeons, if you drive by them, they'll most likely like fly harmlessly out of the way, right?
Especially if you charge at them at full speed.
Whatever, yeah. They're not a threat. They're not a danger. This is what happens in urban situations. They go flying off. A computer flags those little pigeons as potentially dangerous and hittable objects, and it will sometimes completely like go into autonomous braking because of a pigeon.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't know the difference between a pigeon and a person.
Now, bear in mind, this is an example. There are other examples out there that...
Humans are really good. We're really good at it, and yet we're giving control to things that are really bad at it.
Yeah. By comparison, I would say in many cases that's true. I did have a vehicle that nearly put me into a car accident when I was making a U-turn. It was a Honda. And as I was making my U-turn, a legal U-turn, it triggered the brakes halfway through because as I was turning, other cars were right in front of me, and it detected those, and it slammed on the brakes.
How many times have you had that autonomous braking warning come on for no reason? Like there's a car that's in the left lane that's like braking to make a left turn, and your car says, oh, my God, you're about to hit him. And you're like, no, it's in the left lane.
I will say this before we move on to number two, and that is that lane departure systems have gotten a lot better, and they work really well in conjunction with cruise control and distance control. And if you put all those three together, you're at level two autonomy on the highway, and I love that. I love those systems. That is as far as I want to go with autonomy.
Until you get phantom braking.
Yes, and weird stuff like that. But under the
number two.
Number two is very simple, and it's one of the it's my number one, and that is the park button. We went through years and years and years of people building excellent automatic transmissions where you are shifting through a gate. And when you put it into park, you physically put the whole thing in park, and you know you're in park. Now they have a button which may not even be located on the gear lever, if there's even a gear lever, and you have to hit it in order to be in park. Now, I know a lot of you are like, well, you know what, if you shut the car off, it'll put itself in park automatically. That is true. But some of these cars actually go into crawl home mode if you do that, or they'll warn you that you need a service because you did something wrong to the car, and you can actually you can void the warranty if they detect that for too many times you shut the car off without putting it in a park. I kid you not. Look it up. So the park button, completely unnecessary. Let's just put the thing into park. Right? So it's just, it really irritates me. Yes, I know electric vehicles and push button vehicles or whatever they may be, that's a different story. I'm talking about something that has a gear lever and then a separate park button. It makes no sense to me.
Or you know, Tesla's gotten this right? Why do you have to park button and an off button in an electric vehicle? Why not just have an off button?
Just turn shut it off when you're done.
Yeah, just turn
it. And it'll lock itself up and do whatever.
Yeah.
There are other cars that will do that, but not all of them do.
Why do you have to have both? Why do you have to power it down and put it in park?
Because that's how their systems work. And it happens more often in hybrids than anything else that I've seen.
I think Tesla's the smartest one. You put it in park, you close the door, it's off. You don't have to hit the separate power button. You just park it, walk out.
You realize that he's going to find a way to charge you for putting it into park and shutting
it off. Yes, this is true. Sorry, didn't want to. Don't want to give me ideas.
Sorry.
All right, what's number one?
Number one.
All right, let's hear number one.
And this is, actually, you should say this one.
Okay.
Lack of paper manuals.
We did have a recent incident with the Hummer where I couldn't get at the owner's manual, and I couldn't figure out. This is another one, by the way. So let's start with the other ones before we get to this one.
Yes.
I think most people out there, most viewers, readers, listeners would agree that paper manuals are a good thing.
They're nice. A good thing.
You feel like it's, and it's, you know.
And they have abbreviated versions of them now that only take up a few trees as opposed to 50 trees.
No, it's not about the trees.
Yes, it is. But that's what these people are yelling about.
How many people out there, you know, Xeroxing,
I'm telling you, that's
copying
why.
Copying their butts and, you know.
I'm telling you that's why they don't do it. But keep going.
I think that's the rationale they give.
That's exactly it.
To save money.
I'm not saying it's right. I will go and kill the trees for the people. Guys, I live in Colorado. There are plenty of dead ones here. We can turn them into paper, and you will have paper manuals from here on.
So there's this whole reinvention of the vehicle that's happening with electrification.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is good, and a lot of it is bad. And I'll give you an example of this, right? When we got stuck in the Hummer, they got rid of basically the little lever that opens up the frunk. And now there's a little tiny, cable. A pull cord that you have to not pull once, but twice. So once, obviously, now they've gone the BMW route. That could be an accident, even though how you would pull that thing by accident is you know, beyond my comprehension.
No idea.
It's like hidden so far in the driver's footwell that you have to lay down
in order to get to it.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to do it twice. Why not just have a lever there? Why GMC? Why not just put a lever there and then take it the next step, which is Mercedes, which is in that car. Let's bring it full circle. You can't open the hood on that car, Nathan.
You're not supposed to. The Germans don't want you to do it.
Are they taking the Mickey out of us? As you
yes, because why? There's a large filter there. They don't want you touching it with your contaminated American hands.
Why not open up?
But I'm being serious. That they don't want you touching it.
I know, but it's like even in the owner's manual, they don't call you the owner of the vehicle. They call you the customer. And and the one that's in the system, not the paper one. You know, the one that I'm the owner. Why can't I go under? Why are you reinventing it forever? I mean, think about like those old cars where you had the straight eights, like a Packard, right? Cool straight eight, right? You would just open the side of the thing, get at it. Why can't you get under the hood of that thing?
Because there's nothing under the hood worth touching. That's the German mentality. They have a large filter there and some other components that there's no reason for you, average civilian, to touch.
Let me give you an analogy. You buy a house.
Yes.
And you know you have that room where you have the utility room where
the boiler and stuff like that.
Yeah. There's nothing under there that you need to touch. You need to call a mechanic. Why don't you just lock that room up? You shouldn't.
Because that's where you put the bodies. Come on.
But you see, it's the same thing, right?
I'm not arguing.
You have to call the plumber or the water heater
specialist
to go, and then he has a key to that room, and he can only go because that's what you're telling me. You're like, I'm too stupid to be able to see what's under my hood.
But then the Germans will go, but why? You know, the room.
Well, I'll give you why. Because when Tommy figured out how to open it, which we did on video, by the way, alltfl.com, we opened up. There was that giant filter. It was full of leaves. Why can't I clean out the leaves out of my HEPA filter? I'm serious. It was full of leaves.
I believe you. So at the end of the day, I'm sure that the Germans have another reason why you don't go under there, because maybe they don't want someone taking the filter out and then suddenly using it to put a briefcase in. I don't know. I'm not trying to rational.
It's my car. If I want to put a brief, if I want to put a
because you're
if
the
I want
break
to put
it.
A Christmas ham instead of that HEPA filter
because
there,
they don't.
I should have the ability to do that.
They're going to assume that you are caveman and that you are not able to make the car run any better by opening the hood and touching something that has nothing to do with the car.
Once again, the car is smarter than me.
Yes.
Yes.
And but so going back to
it
the,
owns
the
me.
Owner's
I don't own
manual.
It.
Going back to the owner's manual.
All right.
One of the biggest issues is that both electric and, in some cases, hybrid vehicles, which are starting to really hit, think about how many are out there. If you have a power down where you cannot actually put power to the interior of the vehicle and look at the screen on the vehicle, you will not be able to access any information about the car unless you go online, which doesn't help when you're in the middle of nowhere. You were lucky because you were able to contact Tommy.
Look, there should be like an airplane. These are things that should be redundant. So in the Hummer, the first thing the tow truck driver did was he said there should be a tow mode. And so he went and looked, tried to find a tow mode. And he found a tow mode, but the tow mode was when you're towing something, not when you're being towed.
Right.
So some cars have a tow mode where you could actually either electronically, which is crap, but physically, which is better, take it out of park so you could actually
tow
it.
It's like a key or something in a special spot or a screwdriver.
Or like an electronic thing where it just puts it in neutral.
Yeah.
The Hummer does not have that. There's no manual way to put it into tow mode, and there's no electronic way to put it into tow mode. So when the operating system, right, the screen takes a big dump and then goes into park, as far as I know, there's no way to get it out of park without rebooting the system.
That's even if you can reboot it. And the whole point
if
is
you can't reboot it.
If you had a paper manual in hand of some sort that gave you the top 10 things to look for, then you would see on there, oh, by the way, if you absolutely must open the hood, this is what you do. And it's a really simple technique, not an easy one because you have to lay down and grab the damn thing, but the point I'm getting at and the point of this list, of course, is that it is absolutely unnecessary. I see no logical reason not to have some sort of physical description of things in the vehicle that you can hold in your hand. And I don't know, make it orange, bright orange, so you can use it as a warning thing on the road. Add it to something that actually gives it more than one function if you feel that you can't have it made out of paper.
I mean, where does it stop, right? So this may seem far-fetched, but maybe it isn't. So now you can't open the hood. Maybe next time you can't change your own tire or wheel. Why? You know, you don't know how to do it. It's a very expensive, complicated procedure to change a tire or a wheel.
If I own that Mercedes, which costs $150,000, I'm telling you, I'm not changing a tire.
I'm just saying, where does it stop, right?
No, I'm not disagreeing with you either. I want access to a full vehicle. I want to be able to work on my vehicle. I want to be able to drive my vehicle.
Once upon a time, they put tools in cars, and people actually did things like change spark plugs. Now, But even in a
do you want to change a spark plug?
Yeah, I like changing spark plugs. I think it's
you're
very satisfying.
You're so full of it, you can't.
No, I'm not full of it. No, seriously.
Dude,
I love changing spark. I'll tell you why I love changing spark plugs, right? Mm-hmm. Because to me, it's easy. And it's
not easy.
Well, it depends on the vehicle.
Yes.
It depends on the vehicle, right? But if the spark plug is old and shitty, once again, I'm using, sorry, guys.
That's four times this
sorry,
broadcast.
If the spark plug is old and bad, then it's very satisfying because it's an easy fix. You can go, you can get them. They're cheap. They're easy. Some vehicles, they're hard to change.
You have to gap them specifically in a certain way with certain types of vehicles.
That was like 1920. Modern vehicles, you don't have to.
You just buy the spark.
You don't have to have the little gap meter. You buy the spark plug that is intended for that vehicle. You don't have to gap it.
No, sometimes you do. And often, if you're changing your own spark plug, it usually is because you're doing it with an older vehicle. Older vehicles, I can tell you, my wife's Mini, I would love to watch you trying to change the spark plugs.
Well, it's
only four.
Possible.
Only four of them.
Okay,
all right, and you have to take apart half the damn engine to get there.
Like changing the oil is a pain in the butt. It's messy.
Yes.
It's complicated. Then you got to take the oil somewhere, right? Because you can't just dump it. So it's a whole to do. But changing the spark plug is, if it's a relatively straightforward vehicle, it's pretty satisfying.
It can be from time to time. Motorcycles seem to be the easiest, but I will.
The other thing I've screwed up is changing that, because sometimes, like, you know, we buy these old vehicles, what'll happen oftentimes is the cables will go bad, and then they start to arc.
Yep.
I've learned this. Changing those is very satisfying if you get them in the right.
If you put them in the right place and do the right thing.
You just can't pull them off.
Do you remember the red Blazer from No Payment Needed, the one that I bought?
Yes.
I had to change both cables, actually, and I screwed up royally.
Exactly. You got to mark those things.
Yeah, I had to redo it. I actually had to buy another set of cables because I screwed up.
And another thing that's satisfying is changing the rotor in the distributor. The distributor, the old rotor. Because those things go bad, and they're pretty easy to change out. Pulling the whole thing out then is bad because you're messing with the timing. Then
that's
it gets tricky.
And that's the problem, is that you
can
screw
up the timing.
I'm just
talking about the little T-rotor.
Even replacing the rotor could mean that you have to make sure your timing's back on. So timing the vehicle is a pain.
I wish I could change a belt. That has to be very satisfying.
Once again, it depends on the engine and how easy it is to get to the belt. Some belts are in the back of the engine, sort of, if you recall. Yeah, like Saabs and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, they're backwards.
So anyway, we've rattled on for a while here, but I think you guys will agree at least with a couple of these on our list, and we want to hear from you and see what you think is an unnecessary modern bit of technology.
Last question: what's the most satisfying and easiest thing to change? This we do this every time we buy a classic car or an old car, because nobody ever does this. In Colorado, we go through these so much, but it's super satisfying and super easy and super fun.
You're talking about the lights?
No, but that's good. Those are good. No, I'm talking about the windshield wipers. Because you pull up and you can't see anything.
Yeah, because they're usually all rotted out, especially in Colorado.
Right. And then you go and you buy two ones and you pull them out, you put them back on. And usually you can see. It's really satisfying.
I know, I agree. It's pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
Although the back windshield wiper in certain older vehicles, some of them don't come off, or if they do, it's a completely different knob.
We should get an expert, because you go to the parts store, there are now 1,500 different kinds of wipers, and I never know what there's a squeegee kind, there's a double bladed kind, there's the cheap kind, right?
Yeah, some that are built for ice, some that are not.
There's winter ones that have little condoms over them, right? Mm-hmm. I never know which one to buy.
I'd buy the one with the condoms.
You like the covered ones?
Yeah. I'm one of those guys who goes online and I look.
Look like a wrap sausage.
They do look a little strange, but now I will go online and I'll look and see what people, suggest. And I'll go through a lot of comments too, because I know that sometimes some of them are, BS. But it is pretty satisfying to replace the wipers. I think that the lights, the wipers, once you get the car physically back to new, it's kind of a good feeling.
Like, you can't do headlights anymore because they're all sealed, right? The old ones, you could replace the whole headlight.
Yeah.
Like our Porsche 944, that's also satisfying. We went through a period where we had standardized lights and they were all sealed beam, and you just pop the light out, put a new one in.
Yeah.
But then we went into the bulbs, and now, of course, the laser lights and the modern.
The LEDs and all that, when I had my Montero, I replaced the headlights, and it looked fantastic when I did that.
And apparently, cost $6,000 to replace the taillights on the Hummer. So
I hear three, I hear seven. So there's lots of different, but it's also a high tech component. It's not as just simple, taillight. People write this stuff off like, oh my God, that is really good. Well, dude, that's $110,000 for a base model Hummer right now.
But still, $6,000 for a taillight.
Yeah. Deal with it. Okay, so maybe one day you don't go to the manor and have quail eggs. Maybe you hold off.
The way you deal with it is your insurance premiums probably go through the roof.
Well, yeah, most likely. So, you pay your deductible. But at the end of the day, going back to this whole list and everything else, modern tech, in many cases, does not make things better. It makes things worse in some cases.
Yeah, like KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Yeah, and so, what keeps me from losing my mind is that you can still buy old cars, right? And yes, you can still buy classic cars that are all this. And so if you're really unhappy with it, jump in a classic car, an old car, and clear your head. I was just at the Honda CR-V, and they had that first generation. Do you remember that first gen of CR-V? It came out in 1997.
I liked the second one, but the first one was really good. The second one is a little bit more upright, but basically the same thing.
So before we wrap this up, I'll give you a fun fact, okay? So remember it had that little table in the back?
The card table that you could pull out and set up and have a picnic.
Yeah, and then it also had something that was really unique. So nowadays, the space in between the passenger and driver's seat is usually reserved for a big,
something that holds things.
Yeah, like a big box of some kind.
Yeah, an armrest that holds things.
Well, that one had like a little flippy table cup holder that would flip down and then flip up. Do you know why that little flippy thing would flip down? They told me. I was fascinated by it.
Access to the back to get to your baby.
Exactly. So in Japan, apparently, it's very common to go through the car instead of around the car, because we're all like, well, if you want to get to the back, why don't you just
get out the one door and get into the other?
But in Japan, what people would do is they would walk through that little, and that's
why
they had
room to get through it too. There was, they had it on the second generation as well. The second generation was improved from the first one, which was kind of bulbous.
Can you imagine me and you trying to get?
But you know that the first two or three generations, I believe two, they had a manual transmission version of it. So you could have all-wheel drive, manual transmission. These things were like little rally cars.
Dude,
they weren't fast.
If me and you were in that car and we tried to get in the back seat,
it would be hilarious.
It would look like two polar bears going at it.
Yeah, it would be really awful. And something tells me in the future we'll probably get our hands on one of those two vehicles. But stay tuned for that.
I was in that car. It's so simple, right? It's
Yes.
got the little put it in drive.
Easy peasy. And that was the point back then, is making a vehicle that was easy to drive, making it like an appliance. And that's what they're trying to do with modern electric and modern vehicles in general. But by doing this, because people are so addicted to their smartphones,
yes,
you must make these vehicles more complicated. And I think that is the biggest problem. And it's I think it's making things worse.
Well, I'm going to go enjoy some Chromeo in the Mercedes.
I'll listen to The Weeknd.
You listen to The Weeknd?
It was The Weeknd. You were right on that.
All right. Yeah. And guys, let us know in the comments below why you think we're cranky old men.
Yeah. Thanks, guys, for joining us. We hope you have a great week. Take care.
See you. Ciao.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.